Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It is 9:05 here in New Zealand. It's a good deal later in the evening, Monday evening, of course, over there in the UK, where we're joined by football analyst, commentator, and expert indeed, and Matt Reed. And we want to talk to Matt because the EPL is at such a crucial but interesting stage at both ends of the table. So, Matt, thank you very much for staying up a bit later for us so we can be better informed. And good morning to you.
You've caught me at worst times. It's okay.
Hey, Matt, sounding nice and clear and as a bell as well, I've got to say. This is the most intriguing for a while anyway. I say that because it seems like these seasons go forever, but it does. Look, is it Manchester? Is this as simple as it? Is it Manchester City's to lose this title?
Yeah, it is. It is. Despite the fact that they remain behind Arsenal on points, they do have a game in hand with the current run of form, with the way that they're playing, the win. I mean, it's a non-stop winning machine. Arsenal have recently lost a match, so Arsenal's form isn't quite so strong, despite also being littered with wins. And it does feel very much like it's Man City to throw away. There are a few little flies in the ointment that exist within that. Manchester City are under a huge amount of pressure. Do not underestimate how much talk there is over here about this being Manchester City's to lose. And also the amount of pressure they're putting on themselves, and Pep Guardiola is putting on himself, about being the first manager to win four league titles in a row. This isn't talking about the Premier League era. This is in the entire history of English association football. There's never been four league titles won in a row. So it would be an enormous thing to do. And that's very much a kind of a badge he's looking to collect as part of his management over here.
Matt, I look at this run-in for Manchester City, and the only fly in the ointment I can see for them possibly is their away game to Tottenham, who are so hot and damn cold that you would never know. But Wolves, Fulham, West Ham, on form, you'd say they'd handle them. Tottenham maybe could do Arsenal a favour.
It's such a shame, isn't it, that it's Arsenal who are the other team, because Tottenham would go all out to spoil that party. But look who it is who will be getting the benefits of that victory if they win that match. It's really unfortunate that Spurs are the potential fly in the ointment there, because there's a bit of mixed motivation, isn't there? They don't want to be seeing their North London rivals winning the title. I wouldn't be ruling out the game against Wolves. Wolves have played some fantastic football this year, and they've been really, really tough to beat by the top teams. The record against top teams has been really, really good this year. So they're the two that definitely to watch out for. The Fulham game away, you'd expect Manchester City to win it. The West Ham at home, West Ham have been so patchy. But I wouldn't rule out the game this weekend as being a really tight one for Man City.
Arsenal have done extremely well, of course, under their manager, Mikel Arteta. They've, of course, knocked over Spurs in the weekend with great joy, but they got Bournemouth, Everton and Man U. Everton, interesting, revitalised Everton.
Yeah, Everton are revitalised, and they're playing some really good stuff, really hard to score against. They've got one of the biggest rising stars in English football in Jarrod Branthwaite playing his socks off, trying to convince Gareth Southgate to put him into the Euros squad. But there's next to nothing for them to play for. I mean, it's if they win all their remaining games, then they could climb a couple of places, which is worth a bit of money in the coffers. And I suppose it does rub a bit of salt into the wound of the Premier League, who they're claiming are kind of batting against them. But there's little motivation there for them. Bournemouth are playing quite well at the moment. They are one of the form teams in the division, and they're flying high. They've climbed up to 10th place, having been in the relegation zone for most of the season. So Bournemouth isn't an easy match for them, and then obviously there's Manchester United, which is always a loaded game, and that's away, so that makes it tough as well. It's a much harder run in for Arsenal than it is for Manchester City, which is such a shame, because just you do feel like just one defeat for either side and that'll be it.
Couple of really poor results have probably taken Liverpool out of the equation, so they've got 35 games. They've got 75 points. I think they're done, but you never know. They've got Spurs, Aston Villa and Wolves. And, of course, this is quite a sentimental year for Jurgen Klopp as well and their fans.
Yeah, and all the pressure is taken off them now. There's definitely that detail you can throw in there. I mean, they're the absolute shocker of a few weeks. Results against Manchester United, getting thrashed by unfashionable Atalanta in Europe, and then being beaten by their old rivals Everton for the first time in quite a few years at Goodison Park. So that's really hit them. And then that was compounded this weekend with a draw against West Ham, and West Ham have really been struggling. So that was a really bad result for them. It's rubber stamped almost that they're not going to win it. But 5 points back from Manchester City, things could go horribly wrong for any of the other two teams. It may well happen. It just seems unlikely it's going to go horribly wrong for both. So if they were to win it, you'd be maybe put a little bit of money on that. You should get absolutely a massive odds on them winning the title right now, because 5 points back at this stage is a big thing.
It is a big thing. So before we get to the bottom of the table, let's look at a couple of these managers and their standing in the game now. Where does Klopp stand alongside Shankly and Paisley, Dalglish, Joe Fagan? I've had some great managers over the years at Liverpool. Where does Klopp going to sit for them when he finishes?
God, he's right up there. He really is right up there. The biggest thing the claim and the status that I can give to him is the fact that he's the one who ended this run of more than 20 years without winning a league title. That's the massive thing that he's managed to achieve. Putting an end to that run is enormous. You look at Shankly, he's spurred it all and started it all off. And then you had Fagan, and then you had Dalglish. And I mean, many people speak about Joe Fagan as being the greatest of all those managers. But they were all in a run. There was an establishment there at that time, and Liverpool was so established as being the giants of English football in the 70s through to the 80s. Whereas Liverpool have been an upper team. They've been a team you expect to see in the top four or five places. But Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester United have regularly been finishing above them, and it's only really in the last 15 years that Liverpool have climbed back up to be in and around those teams. So for Klopp to achieved what he's done, and frankly for Klopp to achieve what he's done with three sensational players in the form of Alisson, in the form of Virgil van Dijk, and more recently with Mo Salah, they had some remarkably good players before the recent seas, but for just those three really sensational players, the rest of the squad, you look through those players who are currently there, they're not huge names. They're not massive, expensive signings. They aren't some of the best in the world. Admittedly, the two fullbacks, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, are both really impressive players who've been doing it now for a long time. But their midfield is very unremarkable. And the tune that he's got out of them for the length of this season is pretty remarkable, really. So I think a number of those players will go on to rise a bit further. Alexis McAllister in the midfield is a fantastic player. But I also think that a number of those players will fade and disappear off the back of Jurgen Klopp leaving the club. And you're now going to be in a position to see whether or not Liverpool can maintain themselves as a top four team long term, because there's a lot of work to do there once he's gone.
Right. Well, let's just say, for instance, that City do go on and win this. Then maybe they could knock over Man United on the 26th, end of the season at Wembley with the FA Cup final. Just say that happens. Where does Pep Guardiola sit then, in terms of not just Manchester City managers, but world football managers at club level?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's a question that which is often discussed over here. He's sensational because he's done it on three different nations now. All of those teams that he's come in to manage have been blessed with the best talent in that league. That's the thing that holds him back from being comparable with somebody like a Brian Clough, or like an early Herbert Chapman, or like some of the great more recent time managers, even the Giovanni Trapattonis of this world, and some of the great managers of recent German and Spanish ilk. He's always had that top team, and he's always had that slight unfair advantage of having them. But what he's also managed to do with his management and with the amazing things that he's achieved he managed to drive players on and drive teams on, not just to want to win one or two, but to win and to win and to win and to win. And he's also redeveloped their style. He's changed them into a different way. He's developed a new way of playing football. He's developed new tactics that, that across the globe, managers impersonate and they copy what he's doing, because he's so innovative in the way that he now, in his current form, is getting a centre-back to rove out into midfield and have this extra man in midfield, and then having a right-back in Kyle Walker, the way that he kind of like drags inside and has the extra player in midfield there. The fluidity of the formations and the way that he plays the game is imitated. And so for me, he's up with the very, very best of all time. And if I had to name a single manager who was the greatest, I think it would be him.
Wow. Okay. High praise indeed. Let's get to where it really matters, at the bottom of the table. And this is just as intriguing for me, maybe more so. I've got to say, 2 weeks ago, I had Burnley going down. I really did. And all of a sudden, I do not. Because as I look at the bottom of the table and I look at the runner now, this is particularly interesting. Everton fans can mathematically now breathe a sigh of relief. They are safe again for next year. But here we are looking at Forest, Luton and Burnley. And we're looking at two of those three out the back door. So Burnley's run in is Newcastle, Spurs, Nottingham Forest. That could be a really massive clash, that last one. Luton have Everton, West Ham and Fulham. Forest have Sheffield United, Chelsea, and then Burnley, as I said. So how do you see this? I mean, it's financially, it's such a huge thing. Status-wise, it's such a huge thing.
We're having debates over here. Fans, journalists, pundits, ex-pros, etc. We're having debates over here about the possibility of one of these teams winning all three matches. You've got to look at it and say, well, actually, Forest have won 7 games all season. Luton have won 6 games all season, and Burnley have won just 5. So the idea of one of these teams managing to win a games back to back to back is a huge shout. That's not going to happen. It's simply not going to happen. So they're separated by 2 points. Burnley are 2 points behind Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest are only down there because they've had the points penalty from the Premier League because of their financial, their frankly silly spending of last summer. This has led to them being in this slightly false position. But they're only 2 points clear. Forest have won 7 games so far. Forest have got the most informed goal scorer. Who is this? Mr. Chris Wood, of your parts. He is the most informed goal scorer of the group down there, without question. Burnley have got by far the best form of recent matches, something like 12 matches, last 12 matches now. They're unbeaten bar one match when they lost against Everton for a really squiffy goal. But Luton have the easiest run in. There's no doubt about that. Luton are playing Everton. Everton are safe with nothing to play for. And it'd be under the lights at their place on Friday night this week. West Ham aren't in particularly good form. Fulham will probably have nothing to play for, maybe bar one position in the table by the time it comes around. I can see Luton getting 6 points from that. Nottingham Forest have a really winnable game against Sheffield United, their next one away. Chelsea really tough. Chelsea got it all to play for when they're playing well now, so Chelsea will probably win that. And then Burnley. Okay, we'll come back to that one. And then Burnley, you've got Newcastle and Tottenham, 2 horror matches, 2 teams that really have everything to play. And then they've got Forest at the end of the season. It could really come down to that Forest against Burnley match. That could absolutely be the decide. Let's say Luton win 2 matches and get 6 points. That means that if Forest win, Forest stay up. But if Forest draw, Forest go down. So that's a really big thing, that last game.
It's knife-edge stuff. It's fascinating. The great beauty of it all, it has to happen at the same time because all games are starting on May 20th at exactly the same time. It's just such a fascinating competition, into a competition. Chris Wood, you mentioned Absolutely. Chris Wood. Could he possibly be a target for someone a little higher up the ladder with his goal-scoring form this season or not?
I don't want to be a bucket of cold water here, but I don't think so at present. The issue that Chris Wood has got is that he is now playing and playing some really good football. Shot accuracy, or is his shot to goals, one of the key striking stats at present, he is leading Europe. He is the leading stats for any striker in Europe. I think it is for shot accuracy, which is absolutely incredible. And for the fact that he was not the go-to striker for Forest at the start of the season, that was a one-year, and he's coming to the team under Nuno Espirito Santo, and he's transformed his game. But the issue that Wood's got is that he's only performed for this manager in so long. You know, he's been up at Newcastle on loan, didn't do particularly well. Before Nuno came in at Forest, didn't do particularly well at Burnley. It was a bit hit and miss, very defensive manager who was controlling things, but he wasn't scoring enough goals. Now, goal machine. So if he can keep this up for another 6 months, you'd be looking at next January and you'd be saying maybe someone's going to really go for him. But at present, he's really got to prove he can put this together for a slightly longer run than he's currently on.
Sure. Okay. And just finally, in terms of promotion, we're staring down the barrel of Leicester City, Leeds United go down, come back up, and Ipswich Town probably. Is that done and dusted? Or does they go into playoffs?
Not done. Yeah. So there'll be the playoffs at the end of the season. So we've got confirmed tonight. Leicester City have beaten Preston tonight 3-0 with good old Jamie Vardy scoring two more goals and proving he can still do it. So Leicester will be up as champions. Currently in second place is Leeds United, but Leeds United's season has dropped off a cliff over the last 4 or 5 weeks. They're really, really struggling for any kind of form. So I would be saying, because they've got a game, a draw tonight has been secured by Ipswich against Hull, who are one of the playoff chasers. Ipswich have got one more game to play, and I fancy Ipswich to be finishing above Leeds come the end of the season. So the two of those would then be going up, and Leeds, an off-form Leeds, if this happens, will be dropping into the playoffs to be playing some quite informed teams in the face of West Brom, Norwich, and Southampton as well. And I'd fancy Southampton out of those four teams on current form to be coming back up. So that would be two of the teams relegated from the Premier League last season, if Leicester and Southampton both make it up, returning with Ipswich, who've not been in the top flight for more than 10 years, coming up to do their thing in the Premier League.
Is there, or will there be, a new spending cap?
Isn't this, have you been following this today? It's very, very exciting. I'm extremely excited about this. So there is at 3 o'clock today, the news broke from a number of the leading newspaper reporters out there. Martin Ziegler of The Times was one of the first to drop this out. It's that Premier League clubs have agreed in principle, there is no agreement formally yet, but in principle, for a spending cap, which is known as anchoring, to be tied to the TV earnings of the bottom club in the Premier League. Please stick with me here. And so the new rules which anchor the spending of clubs to the TV revenue of the and prize money revenue of the bottom club of the Premier League from the previous season, that then forms the upper cap of what can be spent. Does that make sense to you? Possibly not. So basically, it levels the playing field. It's brilliant because it levels the playing field in the Premier League. It means that the top clubs, the Manchester Cities, or the clubs which have got the wealthiest owners, probably more importantly, the Chelseas, the Manchester Uniteds, the Manchester Cities, the Newcastles of this world, are tied to be spending an amount of money, a total amount of money over the season, which is the same that the bottom club is allowed to spend. It levels everything up completely. There's still a slight imbalance attached to the system, because if all of your TV rights and all of your prize money is the maximum you're allowed to spend, that sets that limit at a certain point. Obviously, the team who is that bottom team, who is making that prize money for their TV rights and everything else, isn't making as much money from their general business model. So that then means that club is never going to spend that kind of money because they would go broke. So there is still that slight imbalance, but it just closes up that division between the Manchester Cities, the Manchester Uniteds, etc., who can afford to spend billions over a few seasons. And it means those bottom clubs can try and squeeze the gap. The interesting detail with this is the teams who abstained from this vote, from putting forward this principled idea, was Chelsea, who liked to spend a lot of money. And the ones who voted against it were Manchester City, Manchester United, and curiously, Aston Villa, who are up in the top four this season, but who don't make as much general revenue as the other clubs.
Wow.
So you can see the reasons why they voted to try and stop this from happening. The full decision will take place at the annual general meeting, which will be taking place in probably mid-June, maybe late June of this summer. And that's when we'll know, yes or no, whether it goes through. But from the look of it, from Man United, Villa and Man City being the only ones who voted against, there's a good chance this will go through.
Fantastic. Okay. And just finally, you're a very interesting man because not only are you an expert on football and other things, you're also the director of a sports journalism at Coventry. Tell us a wee bit about this program and why is it important to have this specialised opportunity? This is intriguing.
Well, so I run the MA in sports journalism at Coventry University. We're a really forward-thinking university which has a really hands-on feel to the course. So students, for example, are challenged and are taken out to different locations. We go to England training, we go to Coventry City matches, we go to Coventry rugby matches, etc. And we do live reporting. We speak to players, we speak to PR people, we generate opportunities, and we create features, we create reviews. We create all the different kind of forms of journalism. It's at a time when journalism is being downplayed and is being watered down by social media and by people who play at journalism and who circulate other people's facts as their own facts from time to time, or who run stories which aren't substantiated, aren't correctly researched. It's just absolutely vital that people are studying and understanding how you verify, how you source this content, and when you can print and when you can publish and when you can broadcast and when you have to just wind it in a little bit and say, I'm going to wait to gather more evidence and make sure that what I'm reporting is factually accurate. And we're at a bit of a critical tipping point now, aren't we, at the moment in the world of journalism, where you don't know sometimes what's coming out or what to believe because there is so much content out there. And what we do at Coventry is that we train to a really high ethical standard about reporting what you know and what you can prove to a significant degree and avoiding anything which is salacious. We actually had a couple of Antipodeans. We had a couple of Australian students over last year, and Kiwis. We would love to have a few Kiwi sports thinkers on the course next year as well. So please get in contact.
So how do they do that? Just not by through the website.
Yeah. If you search through Coventry University and you search MA Sports Journalism or Sports Journalism Masters, or you drop me a direct message, drop me a tweet on @MattReed66. I will gladly chat to you about what we do on the course and about why it's special. And I'd like to hear about your views on journalism as well.
Sounds fantastic, Matt. I'm sure there are young Kiwi journalists, budding Kiwi journalists out there, or even journalists who want to get better at what they do, who would be interested in that. So we'll encourage that again throughout the morning. But hey, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate your review of where we're at because I'm loving it. I absolutely love it. I'm a Spurs man, so I'm sick. So I'm a sick person. But here we go. Thanks so much for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
It's been a great pleasure.
Yeah. Cheers. Matt Reed there, folks.